I will open the Joint Committee on Legislative Audits, Information Management, and Technology for November 20th, 2013. Members of the committee, we have basically two items on the agenda, an update on Cover Oregon and a discussion of a work plan for the 2014 legislative session. The first item is obviously an item of significant public interest, given that this committee usually has no more than 10 people in attendance, probably including the committee. But I do believe that there is a lot of public concern right now. Obviously, there have been a lot of news stories. It's pretty rare for any cameras to be in this committee, but it appears there are two to my left, to your right. The issues surround, obviously, a number of issues. One, there was an expectation that the system would be up and running October 1st. In fact, that's a national expectation, in a sense, for states that are actually doing their own system. Portions of the system, I guess, are working. Portions are not. There is a lot of public concern also because, in many cases, those with individual policies are seeing their individual policies canceled. Although the insurance commissioner has made a decision that those policies can be extended, but that's literally at the choice of the insurance provider or carrier, which may or may not occur. There's a significant issue some of the members have here heard about members or members of the public on OMIP, and in particular those with significant health problems that worry about the loss of their coverage, where the loss of their coverage is a very significant issue for them since they are in the high-risk pool, and since going out on even on the open market would be very expensive for them unless they can go through the exchange. I've had a chance to talk to the director for, I believe, about an hour and a half last Friday. I've talked to Oracle yesterday, or a representative from Oracle yesterday. My hope here today is to give you a chance, and I've submitted a whole laundry list of questions, just about every question that I could anticipate might be asked here, that I'd hope you would do in your presentation. I'm going to give you about 25 to 30 minutes to get through your presentation and leave about 30 minutes for questions and answers here. But I think that's better than just going question back and forth from the very beginning. And then we have the item on the agenda for the work plan during the 2014 session. So, Rocky, I'm going to turn it over to you, and please proceed with your speakers however you had this planned.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the Executive Director for Cover Oregon. With me today is Aaron Cardula, who is the Chief Information Officer for Cover Oregon, and Carolyn Lawson, who is the Chief Information Officer for both OHA and DHS. So she kind of plays two roles there. And all of us have kind of been involved in this process from the beginning, but they're kind of my winged man and woman to answer some of the technology questions. I want to first say that the reason there's so many people in the audience is I've invited my family. I needed friends at this point. So I have some people that are behind me on that. You know, I first just want to start off, and you've heard a lot of the national hearings, and we have both good news and bad news to talk about today, and I want to be as frank as I can, both about what our successes are, what our challenges are, but I also want to lay out what we've stumbled on and what we're doing about that. We know that Oregonians are frustrated. The staff is frustrated. Our contractors are frustrated. Individual citizens are frustrated, but I want to assure you that starting October 1st, people, even though it's a manual process, can sign up for health care through Cover Oregon. And in fact, we'll talk about this, but we have, you know, over 25,000 applications that have come in either online through electronic submission or fax and mail. So there are some really good things happening, and I want to be sure and talk about those today. While we work really hard to get the site up and running to a degree that we're comfortable with, and I'll kind of show you in detail what's working, what's not working, what we're really focused on, and we are laser focused to get this site up and running for Oregonians. Our contractors, our main contractor, Oracle, has made that same kind of commitment all the way from the top of the company, including the major shareholder for Oracle, is personally involved and really overseeing the contract performance of Oracle at this point. We are making great progress, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But I also just want to remind you of what our vision is. It is not just about a website. Website's nice, and that'll be great, and we're really going to change the way people buy and select their health insurance. But it really is about the health of Oregonians. That's been our focus from day one of the governor, of the legislature. It's not just the technology challenge. It really is getting people into the right plans, getting into the right care, and making Oregonians more healthy. Want to kind of remind you, I guess, of kind of our overall strategy. And that is to provide access to about 560,000 Oregonians to really create a single portal that people that are eligible for Medicaid, healthy kids, commercial plans, or group plans can go through. So really one place, one-stop shopping is a term that is often used. Apples-to-apples comparisons, ability to search for providers, the ability to sort plans by price, by quality ratings. We're one of the few states that has started out with quality ratings. And finally, to really help small employees and small employers and their employees provide more options to their employees, which is not available in today's market. Our strategy was really to encourage competition and transparency. We have over 11 medical, or we have 11 medical carriers that have chosen to participate. Eight medical carriers in the small group market, and in Portland, we have the lowest premiums of the 18 major cities. So just our strategy of bringing in a competitive kind of market seems to have worked. We really, from a rate standpoint, are in the bottom of the tier throughout the country. But our challenge that we took on, and a part of the vision of the original legislation, part of the vision of the legislature and the governor that goes back over 10 years, was really to do something comprehensive. And what I mean by that is you really do want to integrate Medicaid, the commercial market, group market, into one particular setting. And starting from scratch, and that's different than any other state. So when people say what our main challenge was, it really was the scope of the project. If you go back and look at every presentation we've made, and I've said what keeps us up late at night has always been the scope of the project. Why have we kind of stumbled here on the IT side while other states like Washington and California haven't? The answer is complex, but let me just talk about Washington. We have 11 individual carriers, 8 group carriers. Washington has 3 individual carriers and 1 group carrier, and is only offering group coverage in three counties of the state. Just the scope of the project that we took on in terms of the carriers and all the different facets of people that we wanted to serve is much larger than the state of Washington. Washington already had their Medicaid automated eligibility system built. So they were really focused almost entirely on the commercial part. In California, remember, they got about 3 times as much money for building the IT system that we did, and they don't do Medicaid eligibility. When somebody goes through their website and it determines they're not eligible for tax credits, they're eligible for Medicaid, they basically are given a letter that says, contact your local county Medicaid department in order to enroll. So Washington, or California, has been successful on just the commercial side, but again, they did not have an integrated system like we did. Their SHOP program has much more limited options than we do, and they paid for their SHOP program almost entirely what we've paid to Oracle for our full marketplace. So when people say, why are you here today to talk about things not being quite right, it's simply because the scope was so large. We took a 4 or 5 year project, tried to condense it into 2 and 2.5 years, and we're not broken, it's just not done. And you'll see that as we kind of go through. So our timeline, As you know, October 1st was the open enrollment began. We started receiving just a very small number of paper applications at that point. That has started to accelerate. We have put out a press release that on the manual portion of the system, that if we can get all of our applications in that people would like, if they want effective coverage January 1, we're committed to do what we can to ensure that that happens. We're staffing up. We've brought on a large number of temporary workers. We're in partnership with OHA and to really try to get through all these applications that are starting to come in, and you'll see some more details then. The deadline that they've set nationally to enroll for coverage effective January 1 is December 15th. And that's the date that we're shooting for. That's the date that we will really be going back to the federal government and saying, here's who we've got for that January 1 effective date for those people who are eligible for tax credits. March 31st, though, is the real kind of outside date. And all the states have anticipated most of the enrollment would probably come in January, February, and March. So our, you know, real laser-focused target is to make sure that we have the portal up so during those last 3 months when we really expect people to come in, because it's the close of open enrollment, you can't get commercial individual coverage unless you have a qualifying event after March 31st. One of the things that we thought we'd do is just take a brief moment and show you what's out there now. A lot of people think we don't even have a website. We do. CoverOregon.com. This is our public site that people can go to. They can apply now. They can search for an agent. They can compare plans or browse plans. I'll give you an example. It's you know, there's always a danger, and Senator Devlin and I talked about this, that when you come to a committee and you put a website up, it works. But I'm just going to show you an example of browsing a plan, and everybody can go on. You can go on this site and do it. Let's put 97306. Let's put Marion County. Let's do not a tribe. Let's do two members in the household. Let's do annual income of $45,000. Okay, age of one is 55. Age of other is no tobacco. Let's say 50. And I really am making these up as I go along. No. And let's do browse plans. Okay. So what that comes up and tells you is that, I have to see it here too because I haven't seen it, up to the top. So their annual tax credit for that family would be about $3,900 or $326 per month. Then it lays out, it sorts first by price, the net cost with the tax credit of any of those plans. So let's take that one there and then scoot down way down there. Let's find somebody else, Pacific Source. Okay, and let's compare those plans. So you can compare those two plans, and you can, it gives you the metal level, it gives you all the information about the benefits, it gives you the quality rating at the top, or at the top there, what those plans are. And so people can go on today and browse plans, see what's available, get an estimate of their tax credit. If I would have thrown a child in there, it probably would have came up and said healthy kids, given that that income range. So people can really shop, and they're doing that today. For people that aren't eligible for tax credits, they're going to the carriers, straight to the carriers, and enrolling using our site and the information we provide. Now, that's good news for Oregonians because they have the information. They can go enroll today. It's not the best news for the exchange because we would like to have had them enroll through us. But the important thing is getting people coverage. How they get that coverage is, you know, it's really not as important as just getting that coverage. You want to go back and for example, on you can find help. Let's do the find help. Oops. Find help, so select any county. Doesn't make any difference. Multnomah County, English, Agent Community Partners, that's good. Just do a search. So we can also access the community partners. We have a number of community partners that we've provided grants to. They can get agents that are in their local communities that can help them. So we've really provided a way of people doing that. And do you want to go back and then show the application? They also then have the option of applying now, which is they can fill out an application online. They can download an application. If they fill it online, they can hit submit, and the application does to us or comes to us. And the difference really now between what is going to happen in the future is we do the eligibility determination. We send them a notification of what they're eligible for. If it's a commercial plan, we also send them a packet to help them select a plan. And if it's Medicaid, it's automatically sent over to OHA, and they will be enrolled in Medicaid. So it is not that we don't have a portal up. We have a partial portal up. It is the eligibility, plan selection, enrollment piece that we're still working on to roll out to everybody else. Okay, let's go to kind of the presentation here. Status update. Nope. Yep. Okay, so in May of 2013, Cover Oregon took over the contract with Oracle. We actually had to write a new contract. It ended with OHA. They expended their funds and met their contract obligations, so the full responsibility for managing the Oracle contract came to us in May. We immediately started doing a variety of analysis and tests and code reviews, and based on that, made a decision in August of 2013 to launch with agents and community partners only. The quality of the site we envisioned at that point was not going to be up to the standards that we wanted to open to the public, so we decided on a soft launch strategy, opening to the community partners and agents, kind of our partners. They could provide us feedback, what was working and not working, could fix it, and then go out for a full launch. In September, and I can remember the day and sitting there and really going through the system, had Oracle make me a presentation in September, and we were still looking at an October 1st launch for community partners and agents. It became apparent to me that our site was not of the quality and the standards and that I wanted to go public with, whether it was with our partners or the full public. So we made a decision at that point to delay going forward for a October launch, and immediately started a process of putting in place our contingency plan, which is bringing on temporary staff, and enlisted the assistance of the Oregon Health Authority to really figure out how we were going to manage this given a delay in the system going up. So the IT system is complex, but it's not broken, and I think that's really important to say. We have the processes and the systems are secure. We've met the initial federal requirements, and you'll see in this after a little section here where we put out some time frames. The problem was in May through August, we could not, the system was not at the place that we could do the kind of testing, system integration testing, user acceptance, where we actually go through with the scenarios, regression testing to make sure all the parts kind of were working. When you fixed one, it didn't break another. Performance testing to make sure that we didn't have the same problem that the federal hub had, which is 10,000 people get on the site and it closes. So performance for us was to make sure that every place throughout the system you could get people through it and they wouldn't just all of a sudden jam up at a particular door. And finally, obviously, security has always been an issue with us, and we've wanted to make sure that our system was not subject to a lot of the problems that a lot of the commerce sites run into as it relates to hackers or people just getting into and getting information they shouldn't have access to. So I'm going to spend a few minutes to show you what's working and what's not working, and we'll start that. In the individual side, you'll see on the left-hand side, in the green, what's working. We've got About Cover Oregon, the quick browse, how to get started, the PDF application, which you can either download, mail, or you can actually send in via electronic, which is the portal application. The portal data verification, so that we're able to make sure that who is on that site is is who they are, who they say they are. The passwords are there. The security questions are all there. So I can't go in and get one of your, your account open. It's almost over the edge. What we're working on and what's not done is eligibility determination, plan selection, and the final piece, which is enrollment. Now, eligibility determination, I'll talk about this in a minute. We've actually rolled out to community partners and agents, and they're testing that now. So even though it's yellow because it's not in the public site. We've put it in our CPA site. Yesterday, it started Monday, put the blast out, email blast to all the community partners and agents. Yesterday, for example, we had over 1,000 applications started by agents. And so we're really pleased that they're starting now to be able to get in that system, put in the information on the family, and get a determination of eligibility. The system stops there for community partners and agents. We then send out the letters based on that and the packets for people that are eligible for commercial plans. And for OHA, we're transferring that over there now. We have over, 1,000 people that have been determined eligible for Medicaid in the last few weeks, that's sitting over there ready to be processed, and those people automatically enrolled. Plan selection and the enrollment is targeted. You'll see a target slide I've got coming up for December 9th for community partners and agents, as well as December 15th is the target for full public. Okay, on the tribal, we've got, you can register a tribe. They have a dashboard to kind of show there, but we have not, we're really at the start of setting this tribal sponsorship programs up and for the tribes to be able to manage the membership in those programs. Remember, tribes in this state want to subsidize in addition to tax credits. They want to also then contribute to the premiums of their individuals, tribe members. So we've really set up the system so that there can be not only the tax credit, but additional subsidies that come in. Not having that ready is not an issue of priority. It's an issue of complexity. We have to make sure that the general commercial market interfaces are working because the tribal interface works on top of that. So that's why that's red versus yellow. We have to complete that first piece before we get there. Remember, they have different benefits. They have different premiums. They can come in and out of the market at different times. They have different subsidies. So it really is almost a separate exchange that you lay over the other exchange. For the SHOP program, the employer, we've got the anonymous quote system that's ready to go. The employer can set up and apply for coverage, create what we call the plan universe, what plans they're going to offer to their employees. But we've kind of stopped a little bit right now on doing the full group setup and how to manage their account. We want to get through the individual piece before we return to the employer account. On the employee, remember, Oregon has a much more extensive option for their for small group employers and employees than other states. An employer can select to do a defined contribution. Say, I'm going to give you $500 a month. This is my reference plan. Within this big circle, you can go pick any plan you want. And it tells the employee, and the only thing is, do you have to make any difference in the payment between the premium and what my contribution is? So if you want a very high deductible, lower cost plan, great. My contribution is going to cover a good piece of that. But if you want a very comprehensive plan, what we call a platinum plan or a gold level plan, then you may have to pay more money. But employees can make that choice. It isn't just one plan, one choice. State of Washington, again, has one carrier in three counties, and they only have one option. The employer picks a plan. The employees must enroll in that plan. Ours, that we've laid out, and with the support of the business community, is to provide a lot of employee choice. Community partners and agents. We've got, how to become one. They can set up their accounts. We have, 1,800 agents that have set up their accounts, gone on and did their ID proofing, got their passwords, and they can list out then all their accounts they have that they're setting up, and they have set up over 3,400 accounts waiting for the eligibility piece to go in effect this week. So they've already loaded in information on 3,400 of their particular accounts. Left on that is really some further refinement around the dashboard so they can really manage those accounts a lot better and get information around their commissions and things that we'll be providing them. On the customer service side, we are really proud of where we are and our interactions with the public with over 39,000 calls since October 1. But they can set up an external account for someone. We've got an integrated voicemail system, service request system, so when somebody asks something that can go to the right people, a way to ticket that and track them. Back-end applications, so we can go in and begin modifying and helping people with their information when there's problems. They can review applications that have been submitted. Back-end enrollment is really getting the information in there so that we can send to the carrier. And then, obviously, as I've talked about, we have the ability then to send that information over to Medicaid so that they can enroll those that are eligible for Medicaid or healthy kids. Still work to be done in the back-end application, and that has to do with modifying some of the data fields based on customer input. We've got to make sure that we've tested that out. For carriers, we've completed the rate and benefit validation, the small group quote. What that means is when an employer goes in and they say, defined contribution, take your choice of these 20 plans or these plans from all these carriers, we can go in and get the quotes within a very short period of time, less than a minute, from every carrier for every plan based on the age census of that particular small employer. We tested that very early. We also have, obviously, the ability to access provider directories for all the plans. What we haven't really finished is the carrier assessment, which they pay part a fee that will help in the long run with our financial stability. Some of the billing and reconciliation hasn't been fully completed and tested, as well as individual employee enrollment. Those are in process. We just haven't finished them. For the interfaces, we've got the CMS interface, which is really Homeland Security to make sure that people are who they say they are. SERF is a national database on benefit plans and rates. So all the carriers through our Department of Consumer and Business Services submit plan and rate information. And where we get that is from a national database. We can't get it directly from the carriers. We have to get it through what's called the SERF system. That's working. We've got the Medicaid verification so that we can ensure that somebody isn't enrolled in Medicaid that's trying to enroll through Cover Oregon. We have the bank transactions piece done with our partner, our banking partner. We're still in progress testing out to make sure the Medicaid enrollment interface works. That's still going on. And we also have some issues around employment department for verification of income when it's not available from the Internal Revenue Service. On our global functions, internal billing, account provisioning, Medicaid verification, message center, document center, those are really done and complete. Where we're really moving to look at is on our environments. We have a testing environment, a production environment, a development environment. So a lot of different environments that you have when you put this massive system together. It's just not a flat-based web page. And we are still working with Oracle to ensure that we have the best and most efficient environments established so that, and give you an example just real quick. You have a production environment, which is what the public sees. And we have what's called an FTS environment, which is really our testing environment. So you develop, put it in the testing environment, test it all out, then you move it to production. That is a big thing to happen in the IT because you don't know what's going to go wrong when you move from one environment to another. And what happens is you postpone doing those pushes to production with all those fixes because you are at such risk. That's why, you know, you'll see us go down and wait 3 days or something because you're pushing to production. We just set up what's called a pre-production environment. So what you actually do is move something up to a mirror of what the public sees. That's where you test it so that you can move it that next day to production and it works. That will allow us to do daily changes rather than weekly changes when we find defects. So we're really working on that. And again, system integration will always be a challenge for us. So managing the IT project, one of the questions was vendor selection. The Oregon Health Authority, way back in 2010, early 2011, went through the state processes to select the vendor for this project. They had two bidders. They had a lot of people that wanted to do pieces, but they had really two that stepped forward and said, we want to, you know, partner with you to do this, really the grand vision that Oregon had. Oracle was selected and began work, I think it was March of 2011, sometime about time you came.
July
2007. Excuse me. So we know we've got a lot of problems with delivery on time, and to let you know kind of what we've done. We've taken a number of actions and accelerated these over the last 3 or 4 months. We started performing code reviews in June and July. And I will tell you, when people say, when did you know there were problems? I will tell you, we really started surfacing those in June and July, when we really started examining the quality of the code that was being put together and found significant problems that needed to be resolved. And we started sharing those with Oracle and asking for them to address those, so which they did. We have elevated the challenges we've had on the IT side to the highest level. I will tell you that the founding members, or some of the founding people of Oracle, are involved in this project to this point. We're talking about the major stockholder, we're talking about the CEO, congressional delegation, the governor's office, my own self, have brought this problem to the highest level. And they have responded by putting on a team in Oregon, and that is the highest level technical staff we've ever encountered since this project began, you know, back 2 years ago. So they are as apologetic as I am. They recognize the task and the targets that we have to come to and are committed to make that happen. We've withheld payments on some of the services that have occurred over the last 60 days that relate to warranties and deliverables that are outlined in that contract. We will, be in negotiations with them and have started those negotiations. Although I will tell you right now, it's not, and my focus is getting this thing up and running. And I've told them that I do not want the financial or the warranties or any of this to interfere with us getting this project up. I can't have them back away, and I can't bring somebody else in to fix it at this point in time. So they need to finish their commitment. They know that. They're pledged to that. Since we took over the contract, we have withheld 5% of any billings they've given to us also, which is above and beyond the last 60 days. As a part of our contract, it's called a withhold based on performance. So that is sitting, it's accrued as an expense, but it is sitting there not paid to them, and they are aware of that. The original IT timeline, you'll see that the system development and testing was really up through April of this year. We were to go into what we call user acceptance testing, and really starting to do the performance testing and things in May and June of this year. We were not able to do that. If you ask me why we are where we are, it is simply that we have not had the ability over those summer months to do the kind of testing that we wanted to do. The best analogy for a non-IT person, and these guys can tell me if I'm wrong, is to picture a model train track circle. And if if we did it right, we could put a train down there and run it around, and we would know where the track is wobbly. We would know where the electricity, for example, didn't quite get the connection for a particular section. That's what you do in testing. You go around and round and round until you fine-tune all those. You replace a piece of track. You get that electrical piece. You clean the track if it's dirty to get optimal performance. What we found when we started testing in June and July and August was not what we couldn't find were those defects because they had sections of the track that weren't done. So you'd start the train out and come to a stop because there was a section missing. So we were really unable to test throughout that process. And that's Senator Devlin?
Can you start winding down?
Winding down, okay. So that was one of the reasons why we had those particular problems. Here's the functional delivery timeline. We're looking at, the first two dates, they did not meet. October 18th, they're going to be providing us eligibility determination for CPAs. That's completed. We have three more releases that bring us to December 16th, which is full system and operational. Let's go to the paper app. Paper app, this just to go through what we're doing now. You can fill out an application, send to us. We'll determine eligibility for tax credits, OHP, Healthy Kids. Applicant received a letter notifying what they're eligible for. If they're eligible for a private plan, they return that packet to us. If it's for Medicaid, we send that over automatically and enroll them. So that's kind of the process that we're going through right now. Let's skip that. Let's go to fast track enrollment. It's important to note all these problems. We have in Oregon reduced the uninsured rate by about 15%. Over 70,000 people have enrolled in Medicaid through the OHA's fast track system. And that's where we mailed out 245,000 letters, got back over 70,000 that said we want to enroll in Medicaid. They are currently in the process of enrolling those. So while from a Cover Oregon standpoint, we don't have enrollments. I think it's important, and the governor says this continually, that from a larger perspective, Oregon has done quite well. We have application fairs that are going on over the next 5 days. We have staff in these five cities that will be working with agents and community partners. Going to wind this down. Gives you a quick picture of current statistics. We've determined eligibility for 1,371 applicants. This is from 2 days ago. Yesterday, we did another 750 with another 1,000 people being found eligible. So we are, we're no longer at zero enrollments. Let me just tell you that. The enrollment figures for the month will come out at the end of the month. But we are enrolling people now in qualified health plans. We are enrolling people now in Medicaid. Those figures will be reported at the end of the month, but we've come there. Our projections are going to be revised. We're looking at those now based on the new federal decision to extend plans beyond January 1. If carriers choose that option, it will have some impact on us. Go ahead. The other thing I want to make sure, because it was some questions around the financial update, federal grant funding, no state funds. Starting in 2015, we need to be self-sufficient. We will be operating based on revenue through carriers and state programs. We're in contract negotiations now, again, as I said, with Oracle around some of the projected IT costs. We're bringing up staff. Go to the last slide. Last slide, and I just want to look at where it says operating expenses. Through September of this year, I was $3.3 million under budget. I'm just going to have you really look at that middle piece. Through last month, I am $1.7 million, although we have not closed the books on that, I'm $1.7 million over budget. So through up to October 31st, I'm $1.7 million over budget. However, if you count the withhold that I've already put in place with Oracle, and right now is our intent not to pay that, we are even. That's a little over $2.5 million. So from a budget perspective, we're still operating within the grant funds that were provided to us. That said, I do not want to leave you with the impression that we're going to be not challenged on the budget side because the additional IT costs to bring this system up over these next 2 months to make sure it's operating efficiently will be a challenge and will allow, probably end up being beyond what we are budgeted for those 2 months. And that's why we're in negotiations with Oracle. So, Mr. Co-Chair, that's just a real quick, quick overview.
I have a series of questions, but I'd like to give the committee an opportunity to ask some questions. So, questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Senator. Rocky, to be real clear, based on what you've presented this morning, it sounds like if a citizen wanted to find out what they were available for today, they could get to the website, it would work, and they could discover all the plans that they might be eligible for, and if they found one they liked today, they could contact the insurance company directly or an agent and enroll.
That is correct, Senator Beyer, except that if they want a tax credit, they need to go through the eligibility process and purchase that through the exchange. So if you're not eligible for a tax credit, you can use our site, and they're doing it today, and go directly to the carrier. If they want a tax credit and the information is laid out on the website, then they need to submit an application to us. And
can
then
they do that afterwards?
Ms. Co-Chair, Senator Beyer, no. They need to do that. If they want the tax credit to be effective from the first date of their coverage, mm-hmm. they need to do it through the website by federal law.
Okay.
I'm done.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question gets to the build versus buy decision that every organization goes through in deploying software. You talked a little bit about the vendor selection. Was there an opportunity? We clearly went with build heavily. Was there an opportunity for us to buy something that could have done this for us and would have eliminated some of the headaches that we're facing currently?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Parker, I'm going to let Carolyn respond to that, who was more part of that process than I was.
So for the record, my name is Carolyn Lawson. I'm the Chief Information Officer of the Oregon Health Authority. I actually was not at the Oregon Health Authority when the selection was made for Oracle. I understand it to have been a two-year process. Aaron Cargill was at the Oregon Health Authority at that time. He may have more information about the process itself. There, at one point, a vendor came, I think it was about a year and a half ago, saying that they had a product that could be bought off the shelf and would produce an insurance exchange. We chose not to go that direction. There are two states who did go that direction, and they are experiencing significant issues. So my answer is no, there was not something off the shelf.
Thank you. Follow-up? Anything?
No, I think that's it for now. See how the rest of the questioning goes.
Representative Vega Peters.
Thank you, Chair. So thanks for being here today. So going forward, as we're looking at how we're going to get this online to get a fully functioning website, are there intermediate checkpoints that you have in place in order to make sure that we're progressing as we need to do? And how's the testing plan going to be integrated in those things?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last question.
Oh, the testing plan, like how is testing going to be a part of that to make sure that when we release something, we're not going to have, you know, glitches, which is the favorite word when describing this.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Patterson, I'm going to let Aaron talk about the project plan and the release.
Co-Chair is a member of the committee. My name is Aaron Cargill. I am the Chief Information Officer for Cover Oregon. So we actually have daily touch points on the status of the build. We have Cover Oregon representatives that are actually we have most of the Oregon Oracle development team on site. We have them organized around the functions of the website that mirror the way that Cover Oregon is constructed. And on a daily basis, we're actually reviewing the build, taking a look at it. We're organizing. We start with a planning meeting in the morning. We have a testing outcome meeting in the afternoon, and we have any kind of change control board to make sure that we're being very thoughtful about what we're releasing into the different environments that Rocky described earlier.
And I would add to that, there is a 21-page kind of detailed task you know, what has to happen each day between now and, for example, the middle of December in order to ensure that we are live with a public site on December 16th. So there is this, what they call a release plan. So every issue or defect or blocker, business critical task that needs to be done as it relates to the website has been laid out, and we work daily, and that's what Aaron, I think, is referencing to, with Oracle to ensure that we're doing that.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, I think you're going to ask some of the questions I have, so go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to go to an easier question first, and it's more a question and just to get some understanding. Very briefly, and probably too simply, my understanding of where we were going is that we have about 500,000 people that are in the plus population. Those are relatively unaffected. We had about 50-plus thousand that were in our standard population, which are now going to become part of the expansion, which should be relatively unimpacted. We had somewhere between 200 and 240,000 additional Medicaid eligibles, given the fact that we were no longer going to be just purely categorical, but we were going to be up to 138% of poverty level. Then beyond that, you have the people that would be eligible for the tax credits within the exchange, and you have the people that would utilize the exchange even without the tax credit because it might be a good vehicle to use to find. What were our anticipated numbers in terms of, you know, through this accelerated process with OHA, we've managed to enroll 70,000 in the enrollment process for the expansion of Medicaid. But what were we anticipating our timelines in when we would actually get to that 200, 240,000? How many people did we anticipate that would utilize the exchange, that would qualify for the tax credit? And what I'm trying to get at, and how many people would just utilize it simply without the tax credit because it might offer them the best deal? I'm looking at this from the standpoint of, well, we're doing better right now. We must have had some anticipated targets in terms of what we hope to be at certain points. Where are we anticipating we'll be now? And to be honest, what is our backup if by January 1st we don't have the system operating? And with people potentially, this date might be changed too, but this actual date of that you have to enroll by March 31st, can you give me kind of a background of what we were anticipating and what we're anticipating now in terms of enrollments?
Sure. Senator Devlin, so let me answer the second question of that kind of quickly. I no longer use the word hope that something's going to work. I've learned through this experience that that's an inoperable word when it comes to an IT project. You don't hope. So when we have instituted this manual backup, even though we're bringing in different elements of the IT piece to help support it and make it faster, for example, the agents and community partners to be able to do eligibility electronically, I am planning right now to do a full manual system from here through March 31st during open enrollment. So the IT piece comes up. That is great. It's icing on the cake. That'll make a big difference. But right now, I am not hoping anything. I am assuming that we are going to continue down the path we are. If it comes up, then it's great. And we're going to target and zero focus on it. But just so when you say, what's your contingency? Our contingency is to continue doing what we're doing now in terms of really the manual and what I want to say semi-IT kind of strategy that we've employed. Our original enrollment targets for the end of 2014, were about 161,000 people in the exchange that were non-Medicaid enrollments but were in the individual market, and an additional 56,000 that would be in the shop exchange portion or the small employer market. Our low estimate, which is, I think, was always probably more realistic for the first year, was about 128,000, which included about 100,000 for commercial individual plans and 25 or 28,000 for small employer. We've reduced that 128 right now down to 114. The issue at the end of 14 isn't how many people you have, it's when they come on. So if they don't come on because they don't have a functional system this year and they choose not to do the manual process, we have open enrollment that starts in October of next year. So it's really what all the states have done is we've started looking at these numbers. It's not the end of year numbers that we're all concerned about as much as what is the ramp up to that. And the ramp up's going to be delayed. Every state is seeing, except for maybe a couple, 10% of projected enrollments come into the exchange nationally. You know, last week, Montana had 20 people that enrolled. You're not seeing the enrollments because of a lot of the website problems nationally and on a state-by-state. You're not seeing the enrollments because people are so dang confused with the implementation of the ACA and the letters they got from carriers. What are my choices? It is a very confusing time for many of Oregon's citizens. If I can have 20,000 enrollments by January 1, I would be smiling this year. And if my site is up and running, that'll have an impact on what I can do between then and March 31st. But we're really revising those numbers now because the president, as you know, kind of changed the rules of the game for carriers and for exchanges this last week. But if I can get, you know, somewhere in that 20,000 or close to it area, we will be have smiles on our face. And that doesn't include, you know, the additional 10, you know, we're looking at probably 10 or 11,000 that we're going to bring in on the Medicaid side. So we're revising those numbers down, and we're targeting low estimates as all the states as well as the national exchange are now. I don't know if that gives you.
It gives me some idea. One of the things I'm wondering about, though, is in terms of when these determinations were made, say as early as August, that this system would not be up and operational October 1st, and that you would have to go to this system, which is now operational, I believe, just last week, in terms of partners and people in the private sector, various insurance agents being able to assist people. When you knew that back in August, and I'm not saying you could influence the press. No one can influence the press. Mr. Reinhardt's back there. But I think part of this is, how was that communicated to the general public? Because you basically have gotten a big black eye because this was not up and available October 1st. And that came right around October 1st. It would seem to me that if people had taken action earlier to inform or at least make an effort, that there might have been a potential to get a little bit more understanding of this than rather than the system just isn't working. And to be honest, part of that legacy of the system isn't working. If I was the average Oregonian out there that wasn't sitting in this committee, I might think there's no point in going on to this site because I'm being told in every avenue of the media that the system isn't working. So I'm asking you a sort of a public affairs question.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, that's a great question. But so just so we're clear on some dates, whether I was right or wrong, whether I had the foresight or not, in August I still believed, based on the assurances that I had, that our system would be available to community partners and agents on October 1. Okay, we knew there were problems. We knew they were on site. They knew they were bringing additional engineering and what we call A-team folks. But we still were of the opinion that we would do that. It was in September that when I did the kind of let's review it front to back my eyes, and I put 100 people in a variety of rooms to look at it with me, that I really made the call that it was not of the quality or the accuracy to move forward. So it was September. We started putting that out at that point sometime, and Amy can, Favre, our chief communications, can tell me how we kind of messaged that. I don't remember the exact dates. And I also want to remind you that on October 7th, we had a board meeting where we were given the pledge by Oracle that it would be ready to go October 30th. So on the 7th of October, we still believed that we were going to have a workable system and that they had the resources to correct the defects that we had identified through this process. The challenge, it wasn't they lied, I think they underestimated the extent of those missing pieces of track that they had to really build in order to have a clunky but a workable system. So it wasn't until mid-October that they informed us that they could no longer meet that October 30th date. We've tried to message that. It has been very difficult because of the national press and issues. The good stories, the announcements get buried. But we've tried to let all of our partners know, carriers, agents, community partners, legislature know that we were facing significant challenges.
I have a final question, and then I'm going to see what the committee, additional questions the committee has. I'm going to put on a different hat here for a moment. You've had two very significant partners in this. One is your principal provider in terms of your contract with Oracle. The other is the federal government, because they have largely funded this project. In fact, I think they've virtually entirely funded this project. I know that from my representations and talking to a representative of Oracle, I believe they know that they have a significant stake in this because their reputation is, in a sense, on the line, which is, for a business entity like Oracle, is probably one of their greatest assets, is what their reputation is. What is our relationship with the federal government in this in terms of what the costs might be if this goes on further? And also, I'm going to put on that other hat right now. OHA has added several hundred temporary employees. Are those being paid out of Cover Oregon funds, or should I anticipate a request from OHA in the upcoming budget to cover some of that cost?
So those are great questions, Senator Devlin. Let me talk about the additional cost around, for example, bringing up the temporary staff and doing this. We had already built in a contingency in our budget, which is we had anticipated about $2.7 million, that if the IT piece, if there was a problem, that we had the ability to bring those folks on board that were contained within our budget. So from the temporary side, while the IT costs are higher than what we anticipated, we had planned those expenditures. I don't want to speak for OHA other than, and if Carolyn or Courtney can tell me if I'm wrong here, but they had anticipated about $1.1 million within their ACA implementation that they could utilize for a situation such as this. So what I've been told is they do not anticipate at this point, coming to you and asking for any funds, that they didn't. This was included in their budget planning, which is, bringing up the ACA from their side of it. We had always had a working relationship with OHA, where we're doing a lot of the customer call center for both Medicaid and commercial, and in turn, they were going to do a number of the operations around paper applications. So this was not unexpected in terms of the partnership, of them assisting. It was unexpected, I think, for all of us in terms of how much that we're having to put into this in this short of time. And now I'm trying to remember the first question. Federal partners, yeah. Excuse me. So we have daily calls almost with either myself or IT or our chief operations officer have daily calls with the feds. They know what's going on. Every time we make a decision, they know. I personally talk twice a week with their IT folks, providing updates back and forth. Carolyn, I know, did that when they had the major responsibility for that project. Aaron's involved in that. We have not asked for any additional funds from the federal government, but I will say that we have told them that we want to entertain that discussion based on what the outcome is of our negotiations with our vendors. But they want to hold both us and our vendors accountable at this point, unless we can demonstrate why they should put more funds in. They don't have an open checkbook. But they're aware of the problem. We continually have discussions with them.
Additional questions from the committee? Yes. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Chair. And that's a long one. So I want to talk a little bit about how we can look forward and kind of learn from this experience. I think that coming into this role as a legislator with an IT background, I know there's a lot of kind of hesitancy and pushback in talking about big IT projects for the state to take on, and I think that because things like this just continue to leave a bad taste in people's mouths. So in the hope of being able to move forward in a good direction with this, I want to make sure I'm characterizing kind of the fundamental problem. Wasn't necessarily a flaw in the system's design, but maybe underestimating the complexity and the resources needed to actually implement that. Would that be an accurate characterization?
Talk about the rules engine.
I can go a little bit of that. So, Chair and members of the committee, the rules are built upon the federal regulations. The federal regulations are 13,000 pages long. Our rules engine is 1,700 individual rules that go through the if-then output. Many of those rules were changing as we were developing. We had the biggest issue we had was when we first looked at the scope of the project, we thought, you know, it's going to be a big stretch, but we can do it. But the scope shifted and changed as the federal rules shifted and changed. So one of the big takeaways from this is it was really great that Oregon was leading, but because we were leading, it also took a lot of rework as the rules would change. We actually got out ahead of conversations that we didn't know were going on. So we thought that, you know, if something was released in rule, then we would write to that, and then there would be something that would come back later saying, well, we changed it, and here's the new rule that everybody has to meet. Then we'd have to go back and rework. So that caused a disconnectedness in some ways, which made the complexity of our scope even more complex. So I think the other thing is that one of those examples is connecting to the federal hub. We, as one of the early innovator states, we were working with the feds to create the specifications for the federal hub. It finally got released in September on version 42. So, you know, that gives you kind of a benchmark. But I think the important thing to remember is that what we have here is a website and a very significant supporting application, which is not broken. It's just not complete. So part of that takeaway is the timeline was too short. And if we were sitting here 6 months from now, rather than having the hard launch date of October 1, if we had had the opportunity to shift the release date, I think we'd be having a different conversation also.
Yeah, thank you. So thanks for that. And I agree. I think that in a year, people are going to, this is going to be a distant thing because people are going to be able to have access to health insurance where they hadn't before, and that's going to be the big takeaway. But from the kind of lessons learned perspective, as far as what we've learned about setting up contracts, you know, when we're having a project like this where we're outsourcing, what are the lessons learned around the contract? What, and I guess even before that, How has this been shaped, and based on our experience, how would we change that shape, or how would we change that contract looking forward to make a, to I think, you know, better protect the interests of the state of Oregon and going forward with this?
So, Madam Co-Chair, let me answer this a couple ways. First of all, we utilize the state contracting procurement process. But the contract, as originally established by Oracle, although it included some warranties and some withhold allowances, was basically time and materials. So they just keep billing you based on time and materials. When we took over the contract, because of timing, we basically had to just move that state contract over to us, so it was basically the same piece. We've talked about this a lot. We've got to get to better performance contracting, not time and materials. And we've talked about that internally as we move forward over the next 2 or 3 years to restructure how we're managing the IT portion of this, there's no question we have to move to more performance contracting rather than time and materials. I also want to add a piece to Carolyn to your question about lessons learned. I mentioned it earlier before the hearing where I said feel like running a marathon. You don't start off at 26 miles. You do 10K, 5K, 2K. And I think if somebody just said, Rocky, if you could do this all over again, what would you do different based on what you've learned? I would have said commercial individual, Medicaid, SHOP, and I would have spread that time out rather than all three of those focused on October 1st. And that, I think, would have allowed the business side and the IT contractor side the ability to really, again, focus on what is needed today as opposed to what's needed tomorrow. And that's the biggest lesson I've learned.
Additional? Representative Harker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Vega Peterson asked a couple of the questions that I was going to go after, but good answers. So part of the problem was the scope. Part of the problem was what's inherent in dancing with the feds whenever you're building software that works with them. The last time I did this, essentially a whole first year was spent working out the standards for data transmission. Okay. So while I think it's going to be challenging to get to a better contracting system where you aren't beholden to a vendor for time and materials, I think it's a good goal, but I think any time we're doing something in partnership with the feds, we need to buffer that as much as possible. I think the rules engines that you referred to having been built took a long time to get there. Release 42 or version 42 was when it finally was standardized and issued to other states and institutions. Is our rules? I think we were turning the rules engine over to some other organization. Is that correct? And how is that faring?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, the underlying rules themselves, the 1,700 rules, is now being used by four different states quite successfully. The rules themselves work. The connectors is where we've had some trouble in the final build, meaning how it saves, how it passes. But the rules themselves are currently being used in other states.
Follow up?
Yeah.
Thanks. And so it's a fair amount of the challenge that we have in here is what has been layered on top of the rules engine.
So,
correct statement?
That is correct, but I'm going to clarify. So you have, you collect information about an individual. It needs to be saved someplace. That information then runs through the rules determination. The rules determination then, at the end of the rules determination, has to trigger multiple things. Those multiple things, it can be a qualified health plan, it can be tax credit calculation, it can be Medicaid determination, it can be the intricacies between a family where one family member, a child perhaps, is on Healthy Kids, one parent is paying for health insurance for a child that's living in another household. I mean, so it can be very detailed. And it's when you get down to the most complex of the scenarios, Those are the areas, and Rocky, you're going to have to help me out here, but those are the areas I understand are presenting the difficulties, is those very complex areas. The core areas, from what I see, and again, my involvement as with the project on a detailed daily basis ended in about May, but the core base works, but it's the difficult and very detailed scenarios, which Rocky, to his credit, is insisting are perfect. Many of the other states are not. Many of the other states that are using our rules and calling it successful are have a trapdoor that goes to a manual process, a queue that goes to a manual process for those most complex. There's a want for the state of Oregon to make sure that we get it right and get it right the first time. It is, in my experience, much harder to not release than it is to release and play Never Mind the Man Behind the Curtain. So I don't know if that answers your questions about the rules themselves and where the issues are.
Any additional? Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brief follow-up. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if one of the lessons that we might learn and take away has to do with making a more seamless transfer of authority, autonomy, responsibility for a project of this scope or even a smaller one. For instance, along the lines of where the contract with Oracle transferred from OHA to Cover Oregon, and what might that lesson be?
From my perspective, members of the committee, from my perspective, the contracting piece is one of the more difficult pieces because we, as separate entities, under the state rules, have to do individual contracts, and we tried to just do a transfer. We couldn't just do a transfer. So there were a number of hoops that delayed actually the establishment of the new contracts with Cover Oregon because as a state we were trying to do what we could in a more seamless fashion. So I think the lesson for us really is to be able to go back and have those discussions about what can we do in procurements when we anticipate that the build is going to be moving from one organization to another or there will be joint ownership of a build. We did not anticipate that kind of a problem when we started.
Thank you.
Yes, Rocky.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Rocky's easier for me to remember than King. So.
President Varga, I want to point out that the Cover Oregon didn't exist when we started this project. So some of these problems that we're talking about in terms of the transition weren't anticipated because there wasn't Cover Oregon. You know, they entered the contract, we're moving forward with this, and then Cover Oregon came on board, five, 6 months later before they first were established and signed into law and set aboard and had a business plan adopted by the legislature in February of 2012. So all of that. The other thing, I'm not a non-IT person, it's very difficult to go to a bunch of architects and tell them to build a car when you don't have the designer who tells them first what the car is going to look like. And that isn't anybody's fault, but we started an IT project before we really had the business defined. So one of the things that Carolyn and I just struggled with when we first came on board was they were so far ahead of us and we were having to pull them back and say, wait, while we decided, was the engine going to be six-cylinder or four-cylinder? So it was really developing the technology before you had the business plan. And that just had to do with the timing of the grant and the legislation to establish Cover Oregon. Nobody's fault, just a timing issue.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Rocky, I appreciate the discussion this morning, and it strikes me that given enough time, you will get the computer system working and it'll work fine. I really don't care about that. What I care about is if you get a deluge of people turning in, now that they know they can turn in a paper application, what's your confidence level that those who wish to be enrolled and complete the process can get enrolled by the deadlines?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Beyer, I can say to you that the governor, Bruce Goldberg from OHA, myself from Cover Oregon, our board are committed to making sure that do the best job we can to get people enrolled by January 1 if they're eligible. That we're committed to try to do that. We've got a plan to, in terms of bringing on additional folks to help that, and we're going to do the best we can to do it. It often is raised in these meetings, there are really only a few populations who actually lose coverage who don't have a choice. I was asked about this prior to the hearing. For example, the OMIP population, the high-risk pool, those people that have serious medical conditions and continuity of care is a really significant issue. I will tell you that Bruce Goldberg and ourselves and the administrator for OMIP, Don Myron, are committed to making sure that those people get their coverage by January 1. We've put processes in place, special mailings, everybody's called, they're being called again. We've got a unit set up to look at those apps to get them in a priority. So there are a couple populations that we are paying extra special attention to because the ramifications of not accessing coverage January 1 are significant.
Anything additional? Well, Mr. King, I have some good news for you and some bad news for you. The good news is that this portion of the hearing has concluded today. The probably good news also is we're going to invite you back in January. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now, colleagues, we do actually have another item on the agenda, but what I'm going to suggest, since we only have about 6 minutes, unless you are really fervent in wanting to present things, is I will make a commitment to talk to my other two Senate members about work plan for the, and I think Vega Peterson will make the same commitment. Yeah. And I just found out that Representative Harker has gone on to chair another committee yesterday, and I'm glad to still have him here on the committee. But there are two members, Representative Olson and Senator Olson and Representative Thatcher, who are not here, mm-hmm. and that's a third of the committee. So I thought it'd be better to hold off on this, and they're both excused for today. And so we will confer with you prior to January, come in with some presentation. The only thing I would ask, actually, from Representative Vega Peertis, it's going to be hard.
JVP.
Is Representative Harker and I talked about this before, and I think now it's kind of timely if we could ask the committee administrator to prepare a letter from both of us, Representative Harker and I are going to do this, mm-hmm. to the presiding officers, asking that they please don't shut us down during the short session, mm-hmm. because we have so few meetings normally anyway, mm-hmm. that if they could just allow us to meet a couple of times, two or three times during the short session, we might be able to actually do a little bit more. And part of the problem with the committee is, like, we meet once every 3 months, mm-hmm. and so it's hard to have any continuity. And if we could get a month where we could get two or three meetings in, I think we could get a little bit more achieved.
And I still think we should put together that letter. I have had the conversation with our speaker, and
mm-hmm. yeah. And so, if you could help us with
that. Absolutely. And I'm fully supportive of that, too. Okay. So.
Is there anything else for the good of the order, or maybe not for the good of the order? Look at the, oh, Mr. Cummings, here. And I don't know the young woman in the back. We're back to our normal audience.
Yeah, you're right.
And if there's nothing else, we are adjourned.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.